there are many different ways to feed horses well. It's not just one feeding system or one brand that's better than the others. Horses respond to nutrients, not feeds or what's on the bag, if that makes sense. Grass restriction is a big factor for a lot of horse owners that they really need to do. So grazing muzzles, strip grazing are both kind of proven ways through research of reducing a horse's grass intake and their calorie or energy intake to kind of keep them slimmer and healthier.
Hello and welcome to Our Equestrian Life. It's your portal to the world of all things equestrian. I'm your host, Dan Bizzarro, and in each episode we embark on a journey alongside industry experts, accomplished riders, and passionate enthusiasts. We get to know them and we learn from their experience and vast knowledge, gaining a deeper understanding of the equestrian way of life. My guest today is Claire McLeod. She's an experienced independent equine nutritionist, and together we explore various aspects of feeding horses, including the importance of appropriate forage, the role of supplements, the need for a balanced diet, how to manage underweight and overweight horses, and Claire shares lots of really interesting and useful tips for choosing the right feed. We also discuss the importance of a correct grazing management and the different forage types. So we really covered all the important aspects of correct equine nutrition. And I really hope you find this conversation helpful. Here we go. Hello, Claire. Welcome to the show. Thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. It's lovely. It's lovely to catch up with you again after a few years.
I know. It's been a while. So what are people listening to this podcast going to learn in the next hour or so?
Oh, that's a good question to start with, isn't it? Do you know, if I could put it into one sentence, it would be the truth about feeding their horse.
Perfect. And why is nutrition so important for horses? Of course, for people as well, but of course, we're talking about horses in this podcast.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, as a nutritionist, it's easy to harp on about why it's so important because it's my job and I'm passionate about it. I think it's just a building blocks for everything else, I guess. Like, you can have everything else lined up, but if your nutrition isn't quite right, you're never going to get the potential kind of optimal health or performance out of your horse. And that matters for kind of long-term as well as short-term. So it's not everything. You know, there's other factors that are really important as well. But I think nutrition is almost like that foundation that you build everything else on, really. Good nutrition, yeah.
100%. And I think if you don't understand the basic of nutrition, then you can waste a lot of time trying to fix other problems, try to improve other parts of, I don't know, improve the fitness of your horse or improve the stamina or improve the jump or improve the way they move. But if a horse is not eating properly and is not feeling healthy because of what he eats, and if he's not eating the right amount of the right food, then you're kind of fighting a losing battle, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's just like that kind of extra end point piece of the jigsaw. Without that, nothing else is really going to gel that well. And also, I think it's not just, I suppose, getting the feed and nutrition right, but it's what you're paying attention to. So I work with a lot of owners who will pay an awful lot of attention to supplements or specific feeds without really getting into the proper fundamentals of nutrition. And they're going to miss something quite big potentially by focusing on these little bits rather than the big picture.
So what are the basic of the equine nutrition then?
Yeah, for somebody who's quite an academic and likes to talk about my subject, it's always quite difficult to make things lovely and succinct in one sentence. But I think if you wanted kind of one sentence about how to feed your horse, it would be, well, first of all, feeding is about delivering a balanced diet. But I think with horses, because of how they're kept and what they eat, a good way of thinking about it is choose and give them an appropriate forage. And that includes both fresh forage like grass and hay and palage, conserved forages, and then balance that with something in a bucket. And that's your basic. I mean, there's a bit more to it than that, obviously, depending on whether they work or they're breeding or growing, etc. But that's your kind of fundamental. You're selecting appropriate forage in an appropriate amount, and then you're balancing that forage with something in a bucket.
Perfect. It's a really simple way of seeing it. And I like to start from there because lots of people think, well, I have a lot of grass in the field, so that's all my horse needs. You know, it doesn't need anything else. He looks quite good. Actually, he's almost a bit fat. And so why would I give it anything else? But actually, unfortunately, unless you treat your fields and your grass is really incredibly good quality, that's not enough, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a really good point because, well, for many of them, I mean, it depends which type of horses we're talking about. For some horses, grass is an excellent forage because they need those high energy and protein requirements as long as it's growing. But for an awful lot of horses that, say, I would deal with in my work, and a lot of the horses in this country at least, and around the world, they don't need that level of nutrition. So you're probably going to have to restrict it somehow anyway. But the other factor that's important is that in the UK and the old temperate kind of grassland, even if you do look after your grass really well and you even kind of look after your soil, you're still going to have some mineral deficiencies for horses. No matter how, what you do with your grass, it's the nature of the grass plant. So that's an important consideration. And, you know, yes, you might come across the Shetland pony who's never been fed anything in their life and they're still alive at 30 and all they've had is grass and hay. But that pony is probably really genetically superior in terms of its what it needs, and it's probably got very low requirements and may not have done a lot of work. But as soon as we get horses that maybe aren't genetically gifted in terms of their physiology and they're doing any kind of exercise or work, we're going to have to really think about the minerals and some of the vitamins that are missing in conserved forages, but definitely the minerals are missing in all forages, including grass. Yeah, they're really important.
Which means that I should definitely at least feed a balancer to my horse.
Absolutely, yes. That's really important. And there's a bit of a fashion, lots of fashions and fads go around social media nowadays. There's a bit of a fashion for, oh, your horse doesn't need any of these, you know, balancers and products. They just need good quality hay. That's not good nutrition, sadly, no.
And I think that's really important for people to know, because I feel that lots of people that maybe have competition horses, then it's kind of part of the routine to feed them and to maybe ask for advice. And of course, we're going to talk about competition horses. But lots of people that maybe have more happy hackers, or, you know, they ride their horses a couple of times a week, they don't tend to think about that side of things. Or maybe even when it comes to competition horses, when it comes to give them a break, you know, in the winter, when they just go out in the fields for a few weeks, should they be fed some balancer in that case as well?
Yes, ideally they should, because when we're thinking about nutrition, without wanting to get too much into detail, we're thinking about delivering all the nutrients that are part of a balanced diet. So that doesn't just include the energy and protein, it does include all the vitamins and minerals as well. So yes, and especially if you've got a sports horse or competition horse that is not retiring and you're just giving them a time off, an easy spell, or and you're picking them up, you need to make sure that their bodies are maintained really healthy even when they're not in exercise and not in work. And so they, yeah, if you put their diet through a computer analysis system and they weren't having anything in a bucket, even if they're maintaining their condition, their body fat levels on the forage, they still really need some vitamins and minerals. Yeah, definitely.
And so how do I choose what to feed my horse? Of course, I don't want to be, we can maybe use two or three different type of horses. So we can maybe have our leisure horses, we can have our low level competition horses, and then maybe the high level competition horses. Because, I mean, you go out there are 150 different companies that do all sorts of different feed. Where the hell do I start? You know, my friend feeds what, I don't know, the local feed supplier gives them. It's £6 a bag and her horse looks okay and they won the last competition, so I'm just going to do the same. You know, that's probably not the right approach. So where do I start?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And there's so much in the answer that I want to give, so I'll try and kind of break it down. So I think, first of all, we have to be a bit careful because, yes, you can tell from a horse's body fat level and their overall look as to whether they're probably having enough energy and protein, but you can't tell from looking about some of the smaller level nutrients, the microminerals, for example. You wouldn't see deficiencies for some years with some of them, so you just can't tell from looking. So the horse might be doing okay at the moment on that feed, but it might actually be at a higher risk of arthritis later on in life because they haven't had enough, say, zinc and copper, which is always short in forages. So you really can't just tell from looking at them. How to choose a product, or my goodness, where do I start with that? There's just so many out there. I think the first thing I'd say, which is hopefully very helpful because it's important, is there isn't just one way to feed horses well. Now, obviously, the feed companies want you to buy their brand, and they've got to earn a living and pay their staff, and it's good that they do because it gives us a good choice of all these different products, which is a nice problem to have, although it can be confusing. But ultimately, there are many different ways to feed horse as well. It's not just one feeding system or one brand that's better than the others. Horses respond to nutrients, not feeds or what's on the bag, if that makes sense. I know that kind of sounds obvious, but I think sometimes it's easy to forget that when we're seeing all this marketing and this company are telling you that this their feed is best, or this one saying, oh, this feeding system is actually better, you want to be doing this. Ultimately, horses respond to nutrients. So as long as you're balancing the diet, how you do that, you can do it many different ways. Yeah.
And that's why I love the fact that you are an independent nutritionist. Lots of time we hear from nutritionists that, of course, they're really good at their job, but they work for a company. And so they will always try to sell you their feed. And I think that it's really important to, as you said, think about the fact that what's important is what's in the feed rather than what company makes the feed. And so when it comes to, I don't want to be, you know, too scientific, but I want to for you to give some ideas of what to look for when I read on the feed bag. If I've got a happy hacker, what should I look for?
Yeah, so I think the best way I can explain it, because if you start getting into individual horses, it can get a little bit complicated. So the way I try and explain it really is we're trying to deliver in this balanced diet. So without wanting to have a three-hour scientific session of all the nutrients and how levels of each one, et cetera, I think it's easier to break it down into three categories, which apply more to the UK maybe than some other countries, because slightly different feeds in Europe. But in the UK, at least, and this kind of applies all round, but it kind of applies most to our type of products in this country, is that you look at like three different, three different categories of products. So if your horse or pony is maintaining condition body fat levels on forage alone, they don't need any more energy, calories or protein. So you just need a vitamin and mineral powder supplement or pelleted, just vitamins and minerals. What you mix that in is a little bit inconsequential, but it depends on their requirements. If they're laminated, you've got to be careful maybe. But ultimately, you're mixing that vitamin and mineral with something to get them to eat it. So the something you use isn't important particularly. It's just got to be palatable. But then if your horse or pony needs a bit more than that, you're not sure of the forage quality, they're not quite doing as well as you think they could, but they are a good doer and they're prone to getting a bit too fat and they don't need a whole lot of mix or nuts, then you could choose one of these balancers. And they're like concentrated compounds that are fed at generally around 100 grams per 100 kilo body weight, so about 500 grams per 500 kilo horse per day. And those will supply your horse with the vitamin and minerals and some extra good quality protein and a small amount of energy or calories, as we tend to call it, because then we think more about body energy from the diet rather than behavioural temperament energy. And then if that's not enough and your horse is either losing weight or not performing well and you know they're going to be in much harder work, then you step up to kind of the third category, which would be your kind of more traditional compound concentrate feed. You can also go for straight and a balancer. There's a few different versions of that, but your easiest option is just your concentrate compound feed. So that's your kind of three categories, depending on their energy and protein requirements and how much more they need on top of forage.
So when a client calls you and asks for you to come and visit and advise on the horse's condition and what they should be feeding, where do you start from? How does it work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you always start, like anybody, as you'll know, anybody that's been into horses for more than a short while realises that they don't read the textbooks. They're all really different. And you've really got to be very aware of that to do a good job with them. And, you know, it's the old story, like with some experience, you realise that fairly quickly. So with nutrition and certainly advising horse owners, the first place we always start is looking at the history of the horse, looking at what they've been eating or what they've had and how they're doing, because then that gives me an indication of their individual requirements. I've actually literally just been writing an article for one of my programmes on energy requirements for horses, and I've been doing a little bit of CPD, getting myself up to date. And basically the textbook energy requirements for horses are just almost pointless because horses vary so much, and as you'll know, in their individual metabolism, in their natural levels of activity, just even if they're all stable and on the same routine, some will move around more than others. Some are more, will just burn more energy naturally, same as people. So you have to look at that individual and you start from there. So although it sounds a bit blunt, with an assessment, we always start with what the horse has been eating and have they been doing well on that or not. And then you build from there. Yeah.
And so then you will, at the end of the assessment, you will give the owner sort of numbers of, you know, what percentage of proteins and everything else the horse will need, and probably a suggestion of which feed would give what the horse need, or which feeds, you know, a horse might need more than one.
Yeah, and that's I suppose that's my USP, as such, that I deal with all the brands. I just pick the product that's going to fulfill what I know that horse needs, but I'll give the owner a choice of brands. And, you know, some owners prefer more natural brands, some owners like the big company brands, and I can work around that. So yes, you basically, as a nutritionist, I'll be starting with assessing the horse, then I'll be discussing with the owner the practicalities of how they keep the horse, because that's a big factor. So all right, for me to say, give them this much turnout, whatever, and then the owner says, well, I can't because I can only be here twice a day. So there's that practical side of it that has to be taken into account. And then finally, yes, so I'll come up with products that I, well, advice about the forage, advice about the grazing and the hay, haylage, whatever forage they're using, and then advice about what to balance that. And give owners a range of brands. And the brand, I don't earn anything from any brands. That's important to me so that owners know that I'm not biased. But obviously, there's certain companies I know and respect, and I like their formulations. So actually, on a smaller side of that, I'll pick the products that I recommend based not just on their formulation, but also how the company operates, how ethically they operate, because we unfortunately do have quite a lot of companies, well, all around the world, but definitely in this country, who don't operate too ethically. And I'm not here to slam or bash companies, but you know, there are some that don't follow the rules. They make outrageous claims and misleading claims. So even if they've got a good product, I'm not going to advise a product from a company like that. I think I'm quite passionate about advising really just the good companies that are operating ethically.
100%. I totally agree with you. And the problem with people that are on the outside of that business is that they, you know, we don't know that, you know, so it's we do need people like you to advise us on that as well, because otherwise you just see the great marketing and the great advertising and you think that they are a very good company, and maybe they're not. So you mentioned forage and pasture. How do I manage it properly? Do I need to give my horse lots of hay? Is it better to give haylage? How do I manage the grass? Is it better long grass, short grass?
How long have we got?
as long as you want.
I mean, this is what makes feeding horses so much more complicated, I guess, but much more interesting than, say, cats or dogs, where you might have more than one type of feed, but you've generally got that kind of complete diet. Whereas, of course, with horses, we're always just trying to balance the forage. And, of course, they have a psychological, never mind the physiological need for forage. They get all sorts of problems if they're not fed enough fibre and enough forage. So it's really, really important. But we also have the challenge, certainly in this country with all our rain and it's not that cold, that we have a lot of grass often. And we've also got sometimes very good hay, which if you're trying to fuel competition horses is very useful. But if you're not and you're trying to keep your happy hacker or even a low-level sports horse healthy and their mind fulfilled by their enough chewing, it can be so difficult to meet all those requirements without them putting on too much weight. I think our hay and haylage in this country is getting better and better. Farmers are making what horses like, but that means it tends to be lower in fibre, higher in sugar and fructan potentially. So it can be really quite tricky to balance all that. And starting with grass and your pasture, most horses will put on too much weight on free choice, good quality pasture. And not all of them, but most of them. So generally, unless you've got a horse with very high energy requirements or one that isn't greedy, because you know there's some of them you can turn out and they just don't overeat. There's others that literally hoover, isn't there? I mean, on all levels, from your native types all the way up to the elite sports horses. So you have to take that into account, and you might well have to restrict the grazing. And it's a tricky one because, like, obviously, we have to be careful that we're looking after the environment, I think, and the plants and their horses turn out and the ecosystem out there as well. But ultimately, like, my job, I suppose, is to look first at the horse's needs. And ultimately, sometimes what the horse needs isn't the best thing for that pasture. So you can learn about pasture and keeping it productive and healthy, et cetera, but often that's going to way oversupply nutrients for a lot of horses and ponies. And that's where things like grazing muzzles can come in useful. Strip grazing's another one. I'm getting into a bit more detail here now, but grass restriction is a big factor for a lot of horse owners that they really need to do. So grazing muzzles, strip grazing are both kind of proven ways through research of reducing a horse's grass intake and their calorie or energy intake to kind of keep them slimmer and healthier. And then same goes with choosing hay and haylage, really. You've just got to really choose what's appropriate to your horse. So that's going to depend on their nutrient requirements, which again can be really tricky in practice, because how much choice have we got from the farmers that we deal with in terms of forage at camp? It's not always easy to find what you want, either really good hay for your sports horses or really low calorie hay for your good doers. It's not easy. We could get a bit more into hay and haylage, but that's like a really quick overview of being very, I suppose, intentional about which forage and how, which forage you pick for your horse in terms of your hay and haylage, and also whether or not you need to restrict the grass, because if you don't get that bit right, they'll never be slim enough to be healthy. And you can't affect that on the bucket. You know, you might see metabolic supplements and this and that marketed, but ultimately there's not really any such thing.
No, I'm glad you touched on, for example, muzzles, because I always advise my clients that have lovely turnout, from now in particular, before the horses get too fat, to restrict the grazing that way, because I much rather the horse be able to spend as long as possible out in the field, yeah, and have some good quality grass, but just not be able to stuff his face or her face all day, yeah, rather than thinking, oh, okay, I need to keep my horse in a tiny paddock, or I need to just turn him out for a couple of hours. I just don't think it's the right way to operate. I'd be very interesting to go a little bit deeper into the hay and haylage, for example. So is it worth to have the hay I use analyzed? And is it maybe important even for amateur riders, maybe have a little bit more of a professional attitude towards it, and so making sure that the quality of the hay is consistent? And I'm not just talking about top quality, I'm just talking about quality. So if my horse needs a low quality hay, that low quality needs to be consistent as well as the high quality.
Yeah, oh, it's music to my ears. I'm going to jump back to what you said about the grazing muzzles and then come back to the hay and haylage, because you made such a brilliant point about the grazing muzzles that I couldn't have put into words better myself. A lot of owners don't like them because the horse can be a little bit frustrated until they get used to them. Most horses will get used to them in a few days, especially if they're given help, or they feed the grass through the muzzle. But you're right, the beauty with them is they allow the horse to just be more natural in their paddock and actually get their head down and graze and move around, and often go out with other horses as well, if that's an option where the horse is kept. So they can be really, really useful, and they do significantly restrict grass intake. So yeah, I agree 100% on that. But going back to the hay and looking at like an analysis and that idea of consistency, I think a lot of owners could get better results with their horses if they put a lot more intentional thought into their forage. And I know it's challenging because it's so much harder than just going to a feed store and choosing the feed, because you might have to go further afield, you might have to have a bigger or smaller batch. You know, it's more challenging, but you're absolutely right. That forage can make a big difference. And if you've got a non-elite horse, it's very likely, and even with many of the elite horses, it's very likely to be most of their dietary intake. It's the biggest part of their diet in terms of not just kilos of intake, but also delivery of nutrients. And horses can extract really useful levels of, or useful amounts of energy out of fibre. Like, we can't do that. So it's a really, really useful feed for them. And actually, if you can find a better quality forage for a horse with higher energy requirements, you're going to basically just be feeding them more species specific. They're going to have a lower risk of gastric ulcers. They're probably going to have a lower risk of a few other conditions. And then you won't have to feed as much in the bucket. sorry, feed companies, for your sales. But ultimately, the more nutrients you can get out of forage for the horse, the better. In most cases, there's always an exception. But certainly for working horses, the more nutrients you get out of that forage, the better for your horse. So putting a lot more thought into the actual forage that you select, as much as you can do, because obviously for some owners it can be quite stressful if they haven't got many choices. And I don't want to make owners not be able to sleep at night because they're worried about the type of forage they have. But the consistency, you're right, is so important. We have a lot of knowledge about gut health nowadays, and a lot of owners worrying about the latest gut support supplement or stomach supplement. But ultimately, the best thing you can do for your horse's gut health is to change the forage in their diet gradually. And that's even more important than the bucket feed. So it's really great that you mentioned that, that consistency, and being careful when you have a new batch coming in, and maybe if you're at a livery yard, holding some of the old one back so you can change over gradually. Because we know from research, one of the biggest risks for colic, apart from overfeeding concentrate feed and not feeding a small enough amount at once, is changing forage instantly, changing forage immediately. Yeah.
That is very interesting, because when I talk about my experience as well, lots of time we go maybe abroad competing and we don't quite bring enough hay. And so we need to then buy a couple of bales at the competition. And so that can be a big risk as well. So making sure that wherever you go, you bring your own hay or haylage, whatever your horse is used to, it's probably a very good thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And like just a little tip you can do with something like that, which you're probably already doing, is just if you have got to get some different hay, mix it rather than just finishing what you've got and then starting the new stuff. Just mix it in so that it's a more gradual change. Your horse's gut microbiome, all the healthy microbes that break down fibre, really rely on a consistent food source. So even just mixing that new hay in really helps the horse's gut to stay a bit more healthy, really. Sometimes I'll go to a vet hospital or be chatting to somebody, and not even all vet hospitals do that, where they'll just have horses in and they'll just feed the forage they've got. And I know it's a bit of a faff to take your horse's forage with you, but especially if your horse is going to be stressed because it's not used to going out or it's a competition type environment, it's even more important to keep the gut microbiome healthy, and by keeping the forage consistent, that's what you'll do. So it's a really important factor. It's a faff, but 100%. It's important.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's a faff if you're not organised, but actually if you think about it and you plan in advance, it's, you know, as you said, you can just mix it when you see that you are being left with just a few bales of the old hay, and you know that your farmer has a new batch, just order it a bit earlier and start mixing it up, and then just go onto the new one. So you mentioned that of course the horse's gut health is incredibly important. Consistency in the forage and feeding the right amount and the right quality is important. What else is important to keep my horse's gut healthy?
Yes, good question. So the next factor, I guess, would be just making sure that we're not overloading the horse's gut with any specific nutrient. And that would mean just making sure we're not feeding too much starch. That's the most obvious one. So horses actually digest starch very well, contrary to what you might think if you believe all the company marketing. But they only digest it well in small quantities. So it's relatively easy to overwhelm their small intestinal capacity for starch digestion, and then it flows into the hindgut and can cause loads of problems. And the issue with that is you can actually get problems before you'll see obvious symptoms. So if you're seeing like a little bit of sloppy droppings and smelly droppings, yeah, that's a serious problem. But you can get like a slight acidic hindgut syndrome from overfeeding starch, which you won't really notice in the droppings potentially. So always no more than 1 gram of starch per kilo body weight per meal. That's quite a nice little kind of cutoff point. Some horses will be able to digest more, but that's a good practical maximum to stick to. And that's, you know, the old days we had this, you shouldn't feed more than 1.5 kilos or 2 kilos per meal to a 500 kilo horse. But nowadays, we know it's more important to look at that actual starch level and then work out the maximum you want to feed per meal from that. And it comes out as less than 1.5 kilos if you're looking at straight oats, for example. We've got a lot of compound concentrates nowadays that are quite low in starch, so the companies have all taken that on. Most of the companies have taken that on board, but that would be an important one. So not to overwhelm your horse's digestive capacity for anything. Feeding enough fibre, really important to keep all those microbes healthy. Stress levels for your horse as well, and I think I mean, I'm getting off nutrition here, but quite often I'll be asked for help with a horse where the diet is pretty good. But the owner might really not have a good understanding of their horse's stress levels in terms of how they handle them and train them and ride them. You're a coach, so I'm sure you'll see cases of that where actually the owner developing the knowledge of that side of things will really help the horse's health, because the brain is very, very kind of interactive with the gut. We call it the gut-brain axis. It's being talked about more in human nutrition, which is great because it's important. So if you have a horse that's just a bit stressed about life and doesn't see their owner as somebody worthwhile to look to when they feel worried, that's going to have a big impact on the horse's digestive tract health for sure. Yeah.
Great. It's something that is really important to think about. So let's move on to supplements. We could probably do a few hours just talking about that. But I see anything from people that use absolutely no supplements to people that use 25 different supplements every feed time. What should I definitely use? And then we can maybe use a couple of examples of conditions that do require supplementation.
Yes. I have to kind of stop and think, because you're right, we could talk for so long. I think someone did a count and it was like 700 supplements available to owners in the UK.
Oh, wow.
Crazy like that. So I forgive myself for not knowing all of them. So I think the first two that come to mind, which aren't actually health promoting supplements, are the diet balancing supplements. So these can be essential. So that would include like a broad spec vitamin and mineral supplement. But that's not like a health benefit product. That's going to be just balancing the diet. The old-fashioned idea that vitamins are a tonic isn't quite correct. We need to always start with a balanced diet and nutrition. So enough of these vitamins and minerals for a horse is really important. So that broad-spec vitamin and mineral supplement, really important. The other one is salt, electrolyte salts, or just plain salt, because horses, as you'll be well aware of, lose salt in their sweat. And they don't dilute their sweat like a human does if they're exercising for long periods and as they get fitter. Horses just pump out sweat. They've just got a lot of heat to dissipate from their working muscles. So they do lose a lot of salt in sweat. So their requirement for salt will increase dramatically with increasing intensity and duration of exercise. So these are two that are absolutely essential if you want to keep your horse healthy.
The thing is, if you give them too much of those things, then it's not good either. So lots of the modern feed companies, they do actually put most of the vitamins and that you need in the feed. So I think it's really important for people not to just go and buy a supplement with lots of vitamins, but check first what's in the bag, because as I said, for example, the feed I use, I know it's very well equipped with all the vitamins. And when it comes to salt, again, it's important probably to say to people that they do need the salt supplement or the electrolyte when they sweat a lot and not every day, because again, if they don't sweat a lot or at all, there are lots of horses that don't exercise enough to sweat. If you give them electrolytes and salt every day, actually it could be counterproductive, can't it?
Yes, and you made two really good points there. If you don't mind, I'm going to jump back to the first one before I mention the salt. That is such a good point, and it's again, it can. There's so many nuances with nutrition, so sometimes it's difficult to get the full point across in a short paragraph. But yeah, absolutely right. You don't want to be adding vitamins and minerals if your feed has already got them in, and also obviously, as long as you're feeding that full recommended amount. So if your horse only needed half a scoop of something that on the bag it says feed 2-3 kilos a day, then you'd need to top up. But if you've got horses like yours that have higher energy requirements and they're on a complete feed with forage, complete's not quite the correct term because they need the forage as well. But yes, if you're using good quality feed, it's got the vitamins and minerals in, you're feeding the recommended rate, you definitely wouldn't then want to add extra vitamins. And then coming back to the salt, salt's quite interesting. So forages and a lot of feeds and supplements, broad spec vitamin and mineral supplements, won't contain enough salt if for working horses who sweat. You're right, there's many horses that wouldn't sweat even in light work. What, as a nutritionist, what I would tend to recommend to owners is offer them a salt block, because sodium is one of the nutrients that horses do have a true appetite for. They will go searching for it if they're short. So using a salt block or having your horse have access to that salt block in those situations is ideal, because then if they need it, they've got it there. And salt, sodium levels in forage can vary quite widely. So unless you analyse, you wouldn't know. If you've got a horse that's sweating and working, some owners will say, well, will a salt block, they'll just take in more salt from the block, won't they? But there's a wee bit of evidence to show that actually not all horses will take in enough salt from a block. So that's where actually adding it into the feed can be useful. Yeah.
And what about other supplements? Are there any you can mention that would definitely be useful for particular conditions? What would you say?
Out of the other 659 that are available. So, yes, it's tricky because we haven't got the evidence there. And the way that I operate in my practice, because I'm a professional registered nutritionist, is that I would always start with evidence-based and then go on from that, because if you haven't got evidence, you still have to come up with something. So I'm constantly, because the evidence is so scant, I'm constantly kind of trying to get feedback from owners I work with and case studies of have these products helped or not. Of course, it's really difficult because generally you're changing more than one thing at once. There are a small amount of evidence for certain things. I suppose the main one that comes to mind would be live yeast. There is some evidence that a digestive support supplement containing live yeast will have some beneficial effects on the gut microflora. But the original research was funded by the company that produced the live yeast. They're a very reputable company, and it was pretty good solid science. But like, if we're being really picky, there's no great evidence for any of them. Like I said before, that doesn't mean to say they don't work. But I think it's really important, because horses are so variable in how they respond, and I've learned that over the years and years I've been in practice, is to just try a supplement with your horse. But, and these are health-promoting supplements I'm talking about, joint, hoof, calming, respiratory, skin, digestive even, stomach support. But keep a journal, monitor your horse, assess your horse, and you won't always see a difference quickly, but you'll get a feel for whether that supplement is going to help your horse or not. And it can be quite difficult to just change that one thing, because if your horse has got a condition, you'll probably be doing other things as well. But there isn't a great way of monitoring whether your horse is a good responder or not, apart from just monitoring that individual horse.
And the other thing you might risk is to give your horse too many supplements, and actually the horse doesn't end up eating all the feed you give him. And so it's almost worse. It would be much better for you to just give them the right feed, good quality feed, no supplements, making sure the horse eats it all and gets all the nutrients and vitamins and minerals that he needs.
Oh, do you know, you're that, again, music to my ears. That's so important. And owners I've worked with a few owners in the last little while where they've kind of reported to me that they've had to drop the vitamin and mineral supplement because they're trying to get this whatever it is, stomach supplement into the horse. And I'm like, no, that's the opposite of what you want to be doing. And yeah, definitely get that diet balance correct first. That's absolute number one, most important factor. And then you can try these health promoting supplements potentially after that. But if it's going to affect the uptake, I'm repeating what you just said because it's so important, if that's going to affect the uptake or the intake of your horse's diet balance, the vitamins and minerals and the good quality feed, then they're better off without it. Yeah.
I'd like to touch on a couple of other different type of feeds. So do I need to feed my horse a mash? What's a mash? When is it useful? When do I need to feed?
Do you notice how popular they've become? It's like a big fashion to have these mashes now, isn't it?
I know. And I like them, and I use them in some situation. I just traveled to France for a competition, and you know, when horses travel, they don't tend to drink as much as they should, and I do find that there are a couple of products that are absolutely brilliant. Horses absolutely love it, and it just keeps them hydrated and happy when they travel. But if you don't travel to abroad, when should you use them?
Do you actually need them? Yeah, and what you've just explained there is probably the kind of more established use of mashes, and it, you know, used to be bran and then sugar beet, but now we've got really good compound mashes that are very palatable, like you say, and hold a lot of water, although sugar beet does as well, actually. Brilliant. Yeah, that's a really good use of them. The other useful factor for mashes would be if you've got a horse that's a bit fussy and you're trying to feed a powder vitamin and mineral supplement, so a horse that doesn't actually need a lot of feed, and that will tend to just mix in better than just using a chopped chaff, which is what we always used to feed. If they just needed vitamins, you'd use a chaff or a chop of some sort. So mashes can be useful for mixing in supplements and or medication that's maybe not that palatable. Apart from that, the only other time where a mash could be quite useful, if your horse has been diagnosed or has any diastema or gaps in their teeth, or they're getting any food stuck in their teeth, that specialist dentists and vets will tend to say avoid short chop chaff or chop, and actually if you're going to feed something in a bucket, use a mash as the base. Obviously if the horse does need compound feed or, you know, nuts, coarse mix, then you wouldn't have to worry about that so much, because then you could just not add chaff. Saying that, some horses can choke on nuts, especially if they are fast eaters. So that's where using a mash in place of a chaff or a chop could be useful.
And what about a chaff? When and why do I need to feed it?
Yeah, it's one of these things that everybody's just always done, haven't they? Feeding chaff to horses. And I've questioned that a little bit recently, because like if you have got a horse, a situation where maybe your forage is limited, I don't know, maybe you're abroad somewhere or in the old days where forage was limited and the horse could be at danger of not quite enough fibre in their diet, then adding more fibre, especially like long fibre, chopped forage in the bucket is probably a good thing. If your horse is thriving on ad lib forage and has plenty of like free choice hay and grass maybe all day or overnight, maybe they probably don't really need much more fibre. But then the benefit of using a chaff or chopped forage in the bucket feed might be it just does encourage them to chew. So again, that could be useful because they generally only produce saliva when they chew, and saliva is a really useful buffer for the stomach, helps keep the stomach healthy. But again, if they're on plenty of forage, they're chewing plenty anyway. So I don't think chaffs are as essential as maybe some owners think, but they are useful, definitely useful for horses that bolt their feed and eat too fast. You know, you can bump up fibre intake with them, and they are very, if they're palatable for a horse with a vitamin and mineral product, then they're perfectly fine instead of a mash, although it's always a good idea to dampen them. I still come across owners who give their horses feed dry, and I thought everybody dampened feed, but not everybody does.
No, absolutely. And actually, if I think about my days back in Italy, we never used any chaff. I didn't even know it existed. And actually, our forage is not great, in particular in the sort of central. I'm from the north, so it's a bit better, but centre and south of Italy, it's just too hot for, for good grass and good quality forage. And we always fed dry feed. We never used to make it wet. And again, it's really interesting because, Italy is definitely much warmer, so you want to make sure that horses get enough liquid and water. And so, yeah, it's really interesting. It's just they just don't used to do it. And, maybe I should translate this podcast in Italian so that they can listen to it as well. So when it comes to weight management and understand whether my horse's weight is ideal, whether he's too thin, whether he's too fat, how do I do that? And then how do I make my horse lose weight?
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, the interesting thing is, there has been some research run, which is quite interesting and a little bit worrying, in that regular horse owners don't recognise or can't recognise when their horses are overweight, which is concerning. And I think also because our horse population is getting bigger, and actually that applies to medium and low level competition horses, not just the happy hackers, which is quite interesting. Our population is getting fatter. There's not really a better word for it, more overweight. And so our eyes are getting used to seeing that. Now, someone like you who's working every day with fit competition horses that will have very healthy levels of body fat, you won't see that so much. But just the general, like I guess when you're out coaching or just generally, if you watch a couple of horses hacking through your local village, most often they're really overweight, not just a little bit overweight, but like significantly overweight. They'd be classed as obese. And it increases the whole risk of problems. Increases the risk of a whole load of problems. But it's not easy to keep them slim. This is the thing. If your horse is in quite hard work, it's easier to keep them slimmer, depending on the individual. But it is not easy to keep them slim. And you will, with the overweight leisure horse, you will have to restrict the grass. That might be really difficult if you're a livery yard and you're not allowed to use electric fencing. You know, it's not easy for people. So it's easy to stand back and say, oh, these horses are overweight. Come on, we should really step up and do something about it. But it's not easy. And it also takes a huge amount of effort on a long-term basis. And on the side from that, there's an amazing lady, a research scientist by the name of Tamsin Furtado. And she is from a sociology background. And she has been working with the researchers in like equine physiology to come up with ways of helping and supporting leisure horse owners with how to keep their horses slim or how to get them to lose weight. And she's been working with the University of Liverpool, and she created a really helpful booklet. I think it's called When the Grass is Too Green or The Grass is Greener. But for listeners, if you look up the University of Liverpool weight loss or something like that, you'll find that document. And it's so useful because it gives really practical advice on not just, well, this is what you do, but this is how you do it and how it makes it a little easier. Because it's not easy with these really good doers. It really isn't. Trying to keep their mind and body fulfilled in terms of their fibre intake and their forage intake, but restrict the calories, restrict the grass, probably going to have to soak hay, which can be, you know, messy thing. But you've just got to get the calorie levels down. That's what it comes down to, that calorie deficit. It's not as easy as it sounds, yes. That's the physiology or the chemistry of it. Calories in has got to be lower than calories out, but that's the key factor. That's the only way they use up their body fat and reduce weight.
And I think another very important point to remind to people is that it's the same with us. It's a lot easier to not put the weight on in the first place, yeah, rather than put it on and then having to lose it. And so, again, every year I find myself at this time of year, actually it's almost a bit late now, but I mean, with all the, we haven't really had some warm weather. But I just, from about beginning of April, I start to remind to people, do you remember how fat your horse got last year? Just prevent it. And, you know, again, use a muzzle in the field, restrict the grazing, because otherwise horses, they might look good today, and in 3 weeks' time, they're obese. It's amazing how quickly they put the weight on. In lots of livery yards, lots of yards, they have the winter paddocks and they have the summer paddocks. And then, of course, you know, we got the winter paddocks, and by the time March, April comes, there's absolutely no grass there. So, of course, your horse looks great because you're feeding them just the right amount. And then you move them onto the summer paddocks. Maybe all of a sudden they can go out 24 hours a day and you don't think about it until it's a big problem.
Yeah, that's such a good point as well. As early intervention, isn't it? And especially if the horse has had a history and you know they can put on weight easily. Taking action before you need to, basically. Yeah, having a plan. I often talk about that. Have a plan for the grass before it starts growing. And you're absolutely right. This is quite a traditional thing to have the winter and summer paddocks. And it's actually really unhealthy to put a horse instantly from no grass onto summer grazing. You know, never mind all the overconsumption of calories and the risk of weight gain, but actually for their gut disturbance as well. I mean, some of them will cope with it okay, but it's not good for them. Mm.
And so what would you do? Would you start maybe just a couple of hours a day and then build up from there? So what I mean is, you know, they still stay in the winter paddocks, and then they start with, I don't know, an hour a day for a couple of days, and then a couple of hours, and then you build up from there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great idea and a good practice if you can do it. Obviously, with some liveries and DIY owners might be just going morning and evening. And that's where, yeah, either grazing muzzles or strip grazing, using electric fencing if you can. Some livery yards don't allow it, but some will allow you to do that. And then you have to be practical about the horse. So some of them, you can literally start them on a very, very small, like postage stamp, and then just strip graze them. So it's not ideal in the beginning because they're not moving that much, but at least you can kind of get them out and then you can strip graze. Some of them will just won't deal with that and they have to move more. So you've got to know your own individual horse and basically come up with a plan of how to do it. Or, you know, I've got owners that will get other horses on their summer fields first and graze them down. I've even got owners who go out and mow. Excuse me, I did that this year myself. Actually mow some of my pasture to get the grass down before I put them back out. You have to make sure you leave it a few days after you've cut it, because it is quite unhealthy. There's a lot of sugar accumulation just after it's cut. So you want to leave it a few days. But actually just mowing off the the yield of grass. Now, I know farmers would hold their hands up in horror, or owners with produce who need food or have higher energy requirements. But for the ones that don't, actually just getting rid of that herbage can be useful. So you just got to be really creative sometimes to find a way.
Yeah, I totally agree. We talked about horses that are overweight and they need to lose weight. But what about a horse that is underweight? And, you know, there are horses, you see them, they look... they don't look good, and you talk to the owners and they say, well, you know, I feed him as much as possible and he's still not putting weight on. Why is this happening?
Do you know what? It's, I often feel they're like the poor relative sometimes, because, you know, I talk so much and share so much free information on social media about the good doers and the weight loss and the grass restriction, and then the poor owners with the skinny horses, they get left out. I don't know which is worse in a way, because it can be really frustrating when you're trying your best and you've got this horse that's just not putting on condition and can't do the work you need it to. And I think it kind of depends. I work with quite a few owners who've got into like different breeds, so they've acquired an ex-racehorse or something, and they're just not used to how much feed some horses need. So it can be as simple as they just need a whole lot more food, that they maybe have not a great appetite for forage, and they just need an awful lot more feed in the bucket. And if you've always been used to feeding one of these good doers, and then suddenly you have a horse that does need more grub, to put it unscientifically, then that can take a while for owners to get used to that. Of course, if you know that your horse is having a good energy and protein intake, and you've checked their teeth, that's a really common reason why they don't thrive, is their dental health isn't good. And I'm talking about actually get a second opinion as well. So even if you believe that, you know, your dentist or your vet who's doing the teeth is doing a good job. I don't like to criticise any practitioners, but with the horse that's not thriving and should be, I'd probably get a second opinion on their teeth. And then if you've got that covered, that's when you might want to start looking into some veterinary investigation, run some blood tests, think about whether the potential for gastric ulcers, because these are all, you might have liver insufficiency or some gut malabsorption or gastric ulcers, and these will all cause a horse just not to thrive with the good quality feed. But quite often I do come across owners where they're just not used to that type of horse, and they're feeding a thoroughbred like a half a scoop of something. Well, that's not going to keep them going over winter generally. Or you've got a horse that just doesn't eat a lot of forage. Some of them just don't eat that much forage. They take more careful feeding, because then you have to make sure that what goes in the bucket is really high fibre. I'm getting kind of off on a sidetrack here, but they're all very different, so you want to kind of really study the whole picture when you've got one of these horses that doesn't thrive and put on weight, because it could be for a variety of different reasons.
100%, and I see it all the time with people that have X-ray horses. Of course, they're scared to feed the horse, because lots of people think bucket full of feed means crazy horse, and I'm forever trying to make them understand that it's not about the quantity, but it's about what's in it. Of course, if you feed them a bucket of a very high starch feed, that's not going to be great for your X-ray source. But actually, if it's the right balanced feed, you can feed them a lot more than you think.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And you're right. And we're very fortunate nowadays that we've got some really good high digestible fibre, high oil, very low starch, but kind of medium to high energy feeds. And quite often they're marketed like for endurance horses or for horses with gastric ulcers or the horses tie up. And these feeds are really, really useful, where you want to just not have the feed go to the horse's head, that, you know, just give them too much extra energy. But you want to put on some condition and feed them to develop their muscles. Those kind of feeds are really useful. I mean, in the old days, we'd use things like unmolasse sugar beet for that, but it's quite voluminous, so they don't always eat enough of it. Linseeds and things like that would be useful for that. But we have got a wonderful choice now of really, really good feeds that you can safely feed in higher quantities, yeah.
And what about oil?
Yeah, and oil's an interesting one. There's often great debates about, oh, it's not natural for horses to eat a lot of oil, so we shouldn't be feeding it. They digest oil very well, providing it's introduced and increased gradually. It might be because their bodies are very used to dealing with fatty acids, because the products of digestion in their hindgut, without wanting to give you a chemistry lesson, the products of digestion in their hindgut are actual volatile fatty acids. And that's what the bugs in the hindgut break down fibre into in the mane, and the horse can then absorb that. So their bodies are used to metabolising that metabolite digestive product. So maybe that's why, I mean, that's a bit of a theory out of the ether, but maybe that's why they can deal with quite high levels of oil. And that's kind of irregardless of their ability to digest it in the small intestine, and they can, because their natural forage diet is very low, about 4% oil in forages, if that. So you can add oil, and it can be very useful as a source of energy or calories for working horses and horses that need to put on condition. But of course, we have to remember that it's very high in calories and fatty acids, but it doesn't really supply any other nutrients. It's quite nutrient poor in terms of your vitamins, minerals, obviously no protein in it at all. So you just have to be careful to balance it correctly, really, if you're adding extra. You can actually buy very oil-rich supplements now, or feed plain vegetable oil.
And so, yeah, you mentioned the vegetable oil. There are lots of different type of oils. Which one would you suggest to use?
I'm going to give a really annoying answer to that question. It depends. And the reason I'm saying it depends is because when we're thinking about oil and adding oil, we have to be a little bit careful of the fatty acid balance. And a lot of people now have heard about omega-3 and 6 and the potential for inflammatory processes. But when we're thinking about the horse, it's a very different diet to a human diet. So we can't extrapolate, you know, high levels of certain oils and human diets to the horse. So the horse's high oil diet would be about 10%, which would be a super, super low fat human diet. So first of all, don't take what you read about human nutrition in terms of oils and extrapolate that to horse. It just doesn't work that way. Secondly, a horse's natural diet, forage diet, contains very high levels of omega-3 in proportion to omega-6. Getting into a bit of a chemistry lesson here. So we have to really think about all these things when we select a good oil to use. To shortcut the chemistry lesson, your best choices generally with horses would be linseed oil or rapeseed oil. That's going to be higher in omega-3. However, if your horse is on a very restricted diet because of weight loss, maybe you're soaking the hay, they haven't got access to much grass, then you actually want to add a little bit of corn oil as well, because that's an oil that's high in omega-6. And contrary to what a lot of people seem to believe nowadays, omega-6 is an essential fatty acid as well as omega-3. So it's not just all about omega-3. We've all become a bit obsessed with omega-3. And human diets and old-fashioned high-grain horse diets are very rich in omega-6. So we have to generally go down the omega-3 route. But low oil horse diets can actually be too short in omega-6, so we have to add some of that as well as the omega-3. So it does depend, but just general horse on a general diet, it's not on super restricted, maybe on some compound feed, then linseed or a rapeseed, absolutely fine.
Great, excellent. I think we touched on a lot of the most important questions people need answers to, and I would just like to invite everyone to go and follow you on Facebook. I will make sure that I put all the links on the description, because you give away a lot of free advice, which is great. I know you have I think about 17,000-18,000 followers now, so well done with that. And I would love you to talk a little bit about your website and the courses that you do, because I really hope that some people that listen to this podcast will actually want to maybe learn a bit more and really understand the nitty-gritty of how to feed their horses properly, or, you know, if they manage a yard, even better. If they are riders, even better. Really try to understand. So where can they find more information?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to jump back before I answer that question to something you said earlier, which I thought was really key. You said something about encouraging horse owners to think like a professional. And I think that's a really good point. Like, I think it's easy to get pulled into all the marketing. Feeding is quite complicated and confusing nowadays. And I think it's a really good thing if you want to really do the best for your horse and keep them as optimally healthy as you can, even if you are a happy hacker, to think about their diet and their lifestyle from a more professional point of view. You will get better results if you're more methodical about it, and you too kind of, I guess, put in the effort to learn. I'm very fortunate. I work with a lot of horse owners who are really keen to learn, and that's wonderful. But having that slight more of a professional idea or professional view of what you're doing with your horse is going to give you good results, even if it's just a case of keeping them healthy and they're not in that much work. So in terms of what I do, so I just got so overwhelmed with all my one-to-one work and my nutrition consultations that I had to kind of steer it a slightly different way. So I came up with this idea, after doing a lot of remote work, like many of us did over COVID, that I could to create these online courses. And it's been fantastic because owners then get the benefit of actually working with me, but we have a group that gets together and we just basically go through everything that you need to know from a nutrition foundation point of view so that you can feel more confident about the choices you make for your horse. So I think I'm on the third run now. I've got another one starting in the beginning of May. But I'm really passionate about sharing the free content on social media, mainly because not everybody can afford to invest in all these professionals. So I think it's really important to be able to offer good quality information and unbiased information. I'm passionate about that because there are some really good companies out there, and there are some of them delivering really good information, and some of their nutritionists are delivering good information. But ultimately, like you said earlier, they are going to be biased. So I'm passionate about being an unbiased source of information, taking us back to the beginning when I said about the truth about feeding horses. So I think I'm really passionate about making sure that everybody's got access to nutrition information for their horse, and they're not just going around in circles with all the marketing. And then if somebody isn't in the place where they can invest in one of my courses or a one-to-one, they've still got some information available. But my website's got everything on it. It's got all the information. I've also got an online library because I kept sending articles here, there and everywhere. And I thought, I might as well just stick them all in an online library, and then owners can pay a very small fee and just access what they want. That's like self-study. So if you want access to me, then you'd have to jump in a course or one-to-one. But there's also that option of searching that library. There's about 420 pieces of content on there now. It's massive.
Wow, that's brilliant. I remember that's why I know you, because I was running a yard and I just thought, am I sure that I'm feeding the right things? You know, I don't really know enough about feeding, and that's why I got in contact with you. I think that was about 11 years ago, maybe something like that. Yeah, it was a long time ago.
But, you know, it's quite clear. Just to say, it's really clear from your questions you've asked me that you've studied nutrition. It's clear that you've studied it and you've got a good understanding of it. So that shows in the kind of questions you've asked and the information we've discussed.
That's good to know. I do think it's a very important part of what I do, and gives me a chance to then be able to train the horses, knowing that they are healthy and they've got the right energy. They've got everything they need, so that's great. Claire, I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much for your time, and keep doing the good work. I really hope that everyone has a little bit more understanding of this subject, and so good luck with your courses and your future, and hopefully I will talk to you very soon.
Well, thank you so much for bringing me on. I could have spoken to you for 3 hours quite easily. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks ever so much, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Bye, Claire.
Bye-bye.
There we are. How much of what we talked about you already knew, and how much was new? As always, if you have any other questions, I would like you to contact me on social media. I'm on Facebook and Instagram at Dan Bizzarro. So feel free to contact me there. I'd appreciate if you could share the podcast with friends. Tell them how interesting the conversations are, and hopefully we can spread the word. Goodbye for now, and enjoy your equestrian life.